Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 31 of Dogcast Radio. In this episode, we have a review of a fascinating breed, the Jack Russell Terrier.
That's the interesting thing. I've got so many people that just love them as lap dogs, but after they've done their job, after they've been busy working for the day, they're not 100% lap dog. They're not going to jump on the couch first thing in the morning and stay there all day. But will they cuddle? Oh, yeah. They love their cuddling time and love settling down with their, you know, mom and dad at night and watching TV. Absolutely.
And Buddy has been going through some big changes lately.
All my favourite things gradually disappeared. My toys, my food, my bed, and even my beloved sofa was carried off in a huge lorry.
But before all that, we bring you a heartwarming, life-affirming story of Faith, the two-legged dog. This is an extraordinary story of the right dog finding the right people and how wonderful things came out of a bad situation. Jude Stringfellow told me about her astonishing dog.
Hello.
Hello, it's Julie Hill.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm awesome.
Good, good. How's Faith?
Oh, she's actually under the bed, looking up at me going, are you talking about me? That's what she says most of her days, under the bed, but she likes it.
For anyone that hasn't heard about Faith, what is special about Faith?
The one thing that's very special about Faith is that she does indeed walk upright like a human. It's a little bit odd when you first see it. In fact, some people are quite taken by it. They're shocked. But yes, she does walk upright like a human. That's the number one thing I think that separates her from other dogs. She's a bipedal dog, not just two-legged. She has only her back legs. If she were to have two legs on one side, that would be different. There are many dogs like that. But she has two legs on her back. You know, she actually walks upright on her back feet. And that's what separates her from other dogs.
Now, I guess the next question is, some people's reaction to that might be, oh, poor dog, you know, is it cruel to keep her alive? So what's her quality of life like?
Actually, we do get that question quite a bit because people don't understand if, and they tend to fear or not like what they don't understand. So they will say, oh, the poor puppy, and why did you do this, and are you sure that it's okay? We intentionally took her to the veterinarian immediately to see what her prognosis would be, and I continue to take her to the vet at least every 6 months because the veterinarian is a friend of mine as well as a very good veterinarian. She gives her prognosis as being perfect for any other dog, just like a normal dog. She doesn't understand why it's that way, but she did say that Faith has a normal expectancy for life and that her hips are fine, her spine is fine. In about 2 years, when she turns about six, we'll probably start a Cosequin or some sort of a supplement that would help her bones and joints just in case it begins to deteriorate like any other dog.
That's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. It's extremely rare. There are a couple of the dogs now that have been allowed to live because of Faith, which is awesome. One's in Ohio, and then Sandra Bullock, the actress, has one. So it's really exciting that more dogs are being allowed to live bipedally.
Now, the other thing is, I mean, obviously, it's just mind-blowing when you think, okay, this dog just has its back legs. What has the effect of caring for Faith been? Because, again, some people would see that as a burden. So what's it been like for you?
It was quite a burden. It was a huge burden. I was a professor of English and actually made the conscious decision to stop teaching full-time to take care of Faith because I said to myself, this is something God actually laid in my lap. I don't know why, but he did. And so I had to follow that faith in my own self and take care of her. And in doing so, I have actually not taught full-time again since I've had Faith. But it's been a great rewarding sense of just communion, you know, commune with her and commune with God, because it is something unusual, but it's something that had to be done, and I was just very pleased and blessed that he chose me.
Mm. And what's the effect been on family life? Because I gather before you got Faith, things hadn't been very good for you, had they?
No, in fact, we had gone through a divorce 5 years prior, but during the 5 years, there was custody battles, that my kids were kidnapped, they were tortured by their father. It took a long time to get them back from the courts because the court made an error and then refused to admit that made an error, and it took a very long time, lots of attorneys and things, to prove to the court they indeed had done something wrong. So after we got full custody of the kids, we were kind of broken, and this is an opportunity, I guess, that allowed us to come together as a family to do something for somebody else other than ourselves. So we took care of Faith and trained her to walk and trained her to be a natural dog is all we really wanted to do. But in doing that, she became an international celebrity. And in so much that now that's all we do. I mean, basically, it is. My two daughters will be involved in two different reality shows because of Faith coming up this year.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. And my son, of course, is in the military, and we take Faith to military bases in his honor to meet all the different soldiers and things because they're somebody's sons or daughters. And they very much enjoy seeing Faith, and they made her an actual commissioned U.S. Army sergeant. So she's actually a full, she's in the Army.
Oh,
she can't be deployed, though. We actually are going to go overseas, though. We're going to do a USO tour in Iraq and possibly Iran.
With the training, how mm-hmm. did you motivate her? Was it food or, you know, what? How did you do that?
We did actually motivate her by using gummy bears as well as peanut butter on the end of a spoon. We tried many, many things, cheese, anything. She likes catching things with her mouth, and so if we could throw it up in the air, she really enjoyed catching it. But the peanut butter on the spoon was the one thing that constantly kept her attention. And so we would be able to just, you know, walk around with one, and if we had one in her hand, she would, you know, prick her nose up and follow us, and she, you know, with her face anyway. And then we could teach her how to hop. And once we taught her how to hop, she was constantly hopping toward us to get the peanut butter. We didn't teach her how to walk. We taught her how to hop. It was our little dog, our one of our little dogs that bit her on the heel that taught her how to run because she just took off after it. Not the happy puppy.
Oh, no. But you see, I've seen this before with disabled dogs. Other dogs, and indeed the disabled dog themselves, don't make any concessions to that disability. They just get on with life.
Exactly. She understood from very, very early on that she really was going to have to make it on her own. We couldn't do it for her, so we gave her the basic tools, and then as she got older and stronger, she had to do it herself.
And how did Faith actually come into your life?
My son, Reuben, was 17 at the time. His best friend called him and said, "Do you remember a couple of weeks ago that my dog, the guard dog that works at our flea market, she gave birth to some puppies?" And Reuben said, "Yes." And Jonathan said, "Okay, well, some of them are dead, and my mom wants us to go bury them." So they drove downtown to where the flea market was, and they jumped over the fence to bury the puppies. And they did find some that were passed away, and they were gathering those puppies up to bury them when Reuben found Princess, the mother dog, actually suffocating Faith underneath her bottom. And so Reuben lifted her up and took Faith out from under her, stuck her down his jersey shirt, his football jersey shirt, and brought her home to me and explained to me. He's like, "You know, Mom, I know you said, I know you told me not to bring any dogs home for, you know." He's like smiling. "First of all, this is a puppy. It's not a dog, you know." And then he said, "And she has no legs." And that's what he said, was no legs. And I was like, "What? What do you mean, no legs?" You know, my vision was just a dog with no legs. I was like, "Reuben, we can't help this puppy." And he's like, "Yes, we can." And when he pulled her out, I could see that she had literally three legs, but one was backward, upside down, and couldn't be used. And I said, "Well, I've never seen a dog with just back legs before. I don't know how we can do this," but I prayed about it. And I said, "Okay, you know, I can't take it back now. I can't." Sucker written right across my face, you know. So I said, "Okay," and I called the doctor, you know, like, so we went to third grade together, and so I called her at her home, and she said, "We'll bring her in the morning," and I said, "Okay," and so I did. Now, you're in England, right?
Yes.
What part of England are you in?
Birmingham.
Birmingham. I have a friend in Liverpool. Her name is Jamie Byrne. She's 13 years old, and she loves to MySpace, and she loves McFly, and we became friends on the MySpace, and I told her that as soon as I could in England, I would say hi to her. So, hello to Jamie. She emailed me. She said, "Make sure you say hello to me."
Okay.
She's a wonderful 13-year-old girl that I'm MySpacing, and she's just awesome, and she's really excited to, you know, to know Faith. So.
Oh, that's lovely. Now, for people that, you know, this is an inspiring story.
Mm-hmm.
For people that want to know more and sort of read more about Faith, you do have some books coming out, don't you?
I do. I have one that's already out. It's for adults, really, and for people over the age of 13. It's called With a Little Faith, second edition. If you order it from Amazon or someplace, you'll want to make sure you get the second edition. The other book is coming out, again, through Amazon, also through Ex Libris Publishing Company, in about 2 weeks, and it is titled Faith Alone, Stories of an Amazing Dog. That one was written on 5th to 8th grade level so that anyone can read it, and it's not an adult book. It's meant for children on up, so anyone can read that one.
Oh, smashing.
Very exciting for us.
Just to finish off with, if anybody has the opportunity to be involved, because I know in rescue, sometimes it's those disabled dogs that people are looking for, in inverted commas, a whole dog, a healthy dog.
Right, a cute little fuzzy puppy or something, right? They're not necessarily looking for the abused or the abandoned. And we weren't either. I had to point that out. I was not looking for a dog. But since I have had Faith, I've had the opportunity, as some have even said, the pulpit, to stand and talk about the necessities of staying and neutering dogs, because it really is very important. And that way the humane societies, the welfare places, they won't have as many abandoned or abused animals. The ones that usually end up abandoned and abused are the ones whose moms and dads were not, stayed and taken care of for the most part. So my understanding would be, since people don't spay, since people don't neuter as they should, when you do go to the Humane Society, give the abused animal a chance, because they need you more than the others, actually. And they end up like Faith, they end up like my other dog, Matrix, in fact, who was thrown away, but they end up being a better dog. Maybe they know instinctively that they didn't necessarily have a chance. I know when I looked at Faith the first time, her eyes were such full of love and full of question, are you going to help me? It was really a desperate look in her eyes. And you don't see that necessarily when you go to a puppy farm or to go pick out a puppy. You don't see the desperate, because they've had their brothers and sisters to play with, and they have happiness on their face. But some of these abandoned dogs or abused dogs, really, you can tell, just like you would a kid on the street, they're the ones who really need our help.
Definitely. And it's just so rewarding, isn't it?
It really is. And I want to throw a little thing out. Just the other day we did a benefit at a gala for the Humane Society here in Oklahoma City. And last year's gala, only 114 animals were adopted. This year, over 250 were adopted. All of the abused animals were adopted. And they said, probably because Faith was there, to show what it's like to see perseverance walking upright. If you see that, you're like, okay, you know what? I can do that. I can help a little puppy. And all the blind animals were adopted. It was just wonderful. There's like four or five blind animals that were born blind that normally sometimes, a breeder will put that dog down because it's blind. But these days, I think Faith has really helped people say, you know what? It's okay if you're blind. It's okay if you're deaf. It's okay if you have one leg missing or two legs missing. It's okay. You can still have a whole life even though you're not complete.
Isn't that amazing, how from such an apparently bad start, a two-legged dog called Faith has been able to touch and help so many people and dogs? We have links on the Dogcast site to Faith's site and to Jude's books.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Buddy's Diary.
Hello, Buddy the Black Labrador here. A very strange thing has happened. We have moved to a new den. All our belongings were packed into boxes. All my favourite things gradually disappeared. My toys, my food, my bed, and even my beloved sofa was carried off in a huge lorry. Our old den was very uncomfortable by now, so we left it. The den we went to belonged to someone else. I could smell many strange scents there. I could smell other people, and worse still, other dogs. I was very worried about what would happen when they came back home and found us there. Would the dogs be friendly, or would they want to fight me? Would the people throw us out? And if they did, would they let me take my food with me? All my familiar belongings merged, my toys, my bed, my sofa. Humans are strange animals, and my people settled down in bed with never a thought to the other people and dogs who might return. Off they all went to sleep, not one of them bothering to stay up on lookout duty. I did my best, of course, and several times in the night I pushed my healthily cold, wet nose between their warm sheets in the hope of encouraging them to come and join me on watch, but to no avail. You'll be relieved to know that the night passed without event, and we could begin exploring our new home properly. The garden is fantastic. Lots of lawn for me and Star to run around on, lots of hedges to snuffle along, and plenty of trees when I have to answer the call of nature. In our old house, there were lots of people close by living in their houses, but here we seem to be surrounded by strange white dogs called sheep. They are really odd dogs, quite standoffish, and I can't understand a word they say. I can see hundreds of them from my garden, and my people always call me away if I look at them too long, and if there are any near when we're out walking, I'm kept on a lead. It seems that there they are odd, they must be quite important, but to be honest, I can't see the attraction, and I'm much more interested in a good game of football on the lawn. While investigating the garden, I found a huge puddle that my people call the pond. I was quite wary initially, as I'm not very brave about water. Silly Star went rushing straight up to it, trotting all around it completely at ease. But then she's just a youngster. She hasn't seen the bad things that can sometimes happen to a dog. Anyway, once I saw that nothing bad happened to Star, I ventured closer to the pond. There are funny creatures swimming around in it, very small, and never mind not understanding, I can't even hear a word they say, even though the mouths are constantly opening and shutting. I have gradually perfected the art of balancing my front paws on the rocks around the edge so that I can dip my head and drink without actually getting wet. It tastes absolutely delicious. There are also tangy, chewy plants that sometimes drift close enough to the edge for me to grab and run off to a quiet corner with. Slowly, I've begun to feel at home in what at first seemed a scary place, and the smells of strangers have been overwhelmed with our scent. The best thing about this new den is that it's all on one level, so no horrible staircases can separate me from my people. I hope we stay here a long time, and if we do ever move, I hope it's not to a den with any pesky stairs. Till next time.
The Jack Russell Terrier is a popular dog for many reasons. You've probably met at least one, but what are they really like? How do they interact with their owners? How active are they? Do they shed much? Could they be the right dog for your family? Now, we did get onto other topics, not so strictly Jack Russell, like what kind of childhood experiences lead an adult to give or deny their child the company of a dog? And how do you get along with those really odd people that don't like dogs? Well, we discussed our theories on that too. I talked to Gay Redpath from Conquest Terriers.
Okay, people that call me to inquire about getting a Jack Russell, first of all, I'll go through with you what I go through with them. You know, I'll ask about their lifestyle, I'll ask about any other animals, and I will ask about a fenced yard being a very important part of containing a dog, especially that's a hunting dog. And then we talk about what to expect, especially if it's their first dog, their first Jack Russell, rather. I prefer not to sell a Jack Russell to a first-time dog owner. I have been occasionally persuaded to do that by the prospective owner, but I'm reluctant to do so because I think they're a real challenge as a first-time dog. So I prefer to sell to somebody who's already had dogs, already has kind of just a basic handle on stuff. And then from there, we talk about what they expect and what they want. Occasionally, you know, they have wrong expectations. For instance, one situation that stands out distinctly in my mind is an older lady in an apartment in Toronto with a walker. And she's on a walker, and for some uncuddly reason, she decides she wants a Jack Russell. Well, that's totally unsuitable. You know, I mean, you just couldn't convince me in a million years that would ever work. So aside from that, most people are somewhat knowledgeable. Most people have access to internet. They do some homework, or they've seen a Jack Russell, or they've talked to neighbors, or they bumped into them along the way. Most people realize that they are an active dog, that they are a fun dog, a challenging dog in some ways, but overall they choose them because they like an intelligent, athletic, active dog because it suits their lifestyle, and that's why they want a Jack Russell. And then from there, we just kind of talk about their needs, because even within a litter of Jack Russells, just like within a litter of Rottweilers or Shih Tzus or whatever, there are some that are a little more high energy and some that are a little more laid back and some that are a little more assertive and some that are a little easier going. So I try and sort out the people's needs and end up pairing them up with a puppy that's most suitable for them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's quite right, because I know our dog, who's a Labrador, was one of the much more laid-back puppies, and I've been so thankful he is.
Yes.
I understand exactly what you mean about some people misunderstand the Jack Russell, because there's a lady in our neighbourhood, and as you say, she's on, you said a walker, I think we say a Zimmer frame in Britain, and you think, you've just looked at the size of this dog, and you haven't really looked at the character that's underneath.
Yes, okay.
And, you know, they do take exercise. They're not a lap dog, are they?
Well, you know, they can be. That's the interesting thing. I've got so many people that just love them as lap dogs, but after they've done their job, after they've been busy working for the day, they're not 100% lap dog. They're not going to jump on the couch first thing in the morning and stay there all day. But will they cuddle? Oh, yeah. They love their cuddling time and love settling down with their you know, mom and dad at night and watching TV. Absolutely.
So we'll perhaps come to the exercise demands later. Uh-huh. But assuming that I do meet this dog's exercise needs, what kind of behavior, how will they be around the house, and sort of how will they interact with the family?
Okay, generally they're a very sociable, friendly dog. Again, you know, a lot of what I tell people with Jack Russell relates to most breeds that not what I call our little foo-foo dogs. Little foo-foo dogs are the ones that have absolutely no thought process, because they're so, you know, they're so laid back, and they don't have a real high intelligence for a dog, and they just would prefer to sleep all day. Those are the little foo-foo dogs. So aside from those, you know, Jack Russell is like most other dogs. They're busy. They're inquisitive. They like to figure things out. If I put a toy away sometimes up high, they'll find a way to get up there and get it again. So, and yet on the other hand, you know, they're very, very trainable, because they are so intelligent. But as with any intelligent animal, it takes a good trainer. It takes somebody with good reflexes, responses, appropriate timing in their training. And man, you've got a dog that'll just do anything for you. I had a very challenging puppy a year ago that the right person came along and purchased, and she does train, and she trains actively, and this dog is just going places. I mean, she's only a year old, but my goodness, this puppy's going to be extremely competitive, probably on an international level, and fly ball and agility, et cetera, once she's done, because she is a good trainer. The woman that has the dog, and it all comes down to that. So most people need help training. It isn't that it's a bad dog, it's just that they give them the wrong signals. And therefore, I highly recommend, I don't require, but highly recommend that everybody goes to obedience class. And it's not to teach the dog obedience so much, it's to teach the handler how to appropriately train the dog, because they make so many mistakes. And the Jack Russell, being so intelligent, picks up on these inconsistencies and doesn't do very well. Timing is important. Most dogs have about a 15-second time frame in which you can correct. And if you don't do the correction within 15 seconds, and hopefully sooner, then you may as well forget it. You know, just don't even bother. And people don't think about this. You know, by the time they crawl after the dog, or they catch the dog, or they do this or they do that, it's too late. Just forget it. And that's a huge problem. So really, yeah, the training is something that needs to be done, and that will make a really good, obedient, and a very pleasant dog in the home and family and with the family. I've had a couple of my dogs, I think about two now, that have gone on to be international therapy dogs, where they you know, they're socialized well, they're friendly with people, they love everybody. They have to go through a testing period with a specialized trainer and tester, and have to be among people and be held by people and you know, work crowds and just different things like this. And if they achieve that, then they get their TDI title, which is Therapy Dog International. And once they have a Therapy Dog International title, they have the privilege of visiting hospitals and doing therapy work with people. And Jack Russells are very good in many avenues, from the TDI, which is a therapy dog, to, you know, not just hunting, which they're well known for, but other people do the St. John's Ambulance over here, which is similar to therapy, but not quite as intense. And then there's flyball, there's agility, there's so many things. I've seen these little dogs hunt not only with the underground animals, but they've also been bird dogs and squirrel dogs, and they're very, very well-rounded. And as far as a great farm dog goes, they're super. And yet, they live happily in the city as long as they have an active family.
You've talked about the hunting aspect and sort of the working. So what kind of hunting, you know, if I've got a Jack Russell and I want to give them this outlet to use his brain and to use his energy, what does that involve?
I mean, we have a simulated go-to-ground in which a caged rat is at the end, and this is a test for the dogs that never get out in the field. And the rat is perfectly safe, and the dogs go through the simulated tunnel, and they find the rat, and they bark at it. And it's called Go to Ground, and it's just a fun game that a lot of dogs get to do at trials where they're set up. But there is the real hunting type of thing, and it's basically a service to the farmers. And much as I'm sure you know about in England, there have been hunters over the years that do a service to the farmers over there for nuisance animals. And that's basically what it is here too. And it can be anything above or below ground.
So they're obviously sort of, as you say, a quite a high energy dog. So what sort of exercise do you have to provide for a Jack Russell?
You know, it doesn't have to be a marathon every day. Thank goodness, because I don't.
No.
A lot of people just have a large fenced yard. Some people, you know, with children, it's wonderful. The children wear off their energy along with a Jack Russell. People at work, if they have a higher-end Jack Russell, they'll come home from work and throw a ball for 20 minutes or half an hour. And, you know, just to take the edge off the Jack Russell so they can start to relax. And other people, they just don't need to do that. There's other Jack Russells that just don't require that. They're just happy to just sort of totter around and take a little stroll, et cetera, et cetera. Most Jack Russells, though, need a little bit of an energy release. Most of them need either, you know, run in the woods or just a good, you know, good long time out in the yard or throwing ball or one thing or another. But not all. It's real individual. Certainly the Jack Russell that's the happiest is the one that gets out the most, you know, and has time to stretch their legs and really do what nature has provided their genetic makeup to do, which is basically roam around and hunt. But the average city person can't have that. There certainly are country people with lots and lots of acreage where the Jack Russell follows them everywhere. And, you know, those are happy dogs. It's the dogs that are unhappy, that do not have their physical requirements met, are the ones that turn to destructive behavior in the house simply because they have too much energy and they're not getting a chance to, you know, have an outlet for it.
Yeah. Is there much grooming involved?
Actually, there can be. It depends on which Jack Russell you take. There's three different coats. There's a smooth, a broken, and a rough. Now, everybody, you know, gets an impression of what a smooth coat looks like. And the smooth coat Jack Russell would be similar to most smooth-coated dogs, more like a smooth-coated beagle, I guess, where they have more of a dense coat. It's not a short, flat coat like a whippet or a greyhound would be, because that's a really flat coat that lays close to the skin. A Jack Russell, even a smooth coat, is supposed to have some density and texture to it and thickness so they can stay warm. They just don't have the long hairs. And then the rough coat is exactly what you'd think. It's really long hair, rough, rough, rough on the face, the ears, the legs, the body, everywhere. And when the dog grows out a complete rough coat, it's really monstrous. And then the broken coat lays somewhere in between. You get facial hair, usually don't get much hair on the ears, if any, and you get kind of a strip down the back with a little, you know, a few hairs spreading out from the hips and the shoulders and the belly and the neck, but it isn't a ton of hair. Of course, the rough coat requires more grooming. than most. The broken coat is my all-time favorite coat because it doesn't require as much grooming, but it's also, to me, it's the most sensible coat. You can let them grow in with their broken and their longer hair through the winter or the cold, rainy climates, and they stay warmer. And then come springtime, you know, a lot of that hair starts to fall out naturally anyways in the summer, spring, summer, and you can just help it by brushing or pulling on the long hairs and stripping the hair that's going to fall out anyways from the winter down to a shorter coat. And then that shorter coat is so much more adaptable for summer activities that is ideal. The smooth coats, if you have a really good thick smooth coat, they do okay in the winter, but obviously they're going to be a little colder. You're not going to survive or you know, be as happy to go outside in brutal weather. So therefore, of all the coats, the broken coat is my favorite. It requires the least grooming. And believe it or not, it doesn't shed that much. It doesn't shed as much as a smooth coat. A smooth coat, for some reason, will shed more. And I think that's, you know, that's the reason it's one of my most popular coats, and probably generally most breeders prefer to have a good broken coat versus a smooth coat and a rough coat. They have a coarse texture to their coat. The coarseness of the texture is on the outer coat. In other words, the outer hairs that lay on top of the thick coat. And that coarser texture is actually supposed to be a waterproof jacket. And, of course, the jacket is the English term for coat. So the waterproof jacket is supposed to repel the water. And if you have a dog with an excellent jacket, they can be standing in pouring rain, and if you dig your fingers into their coat, you'll feel that warmth undercoat is still dry. It's almost like having a waterproof down jacket on. The down is the fluff underneath that keeps you nice and warm, and on the outside is the waterproof stuff, and that's sort of what their jacket is supposed to do, the same type of thing. Have that finer coat underneath that's really, really thick and warm, and that coarser coat on top that's water repellent. So they're very versatile outdoors. And also, the other interesting thing is, because of that coarse jacket on the outside, they can roll in the dirt and get up and be muddy. And I'll tell you what, the next day, if you didn't bother to bathe them, the next day it dries and it falls off. And it's just the coat, the hair shaft does not absorb the dirt like a normal soft-coated dog's hair shaft would. It's really versatile. I've also had people, these dogs are not a non-allergenic dog, but on the other hand, I've had doctors recommend people to me with mild allergies for the terrier, because there's something about the coarse terrier coat that doesn't activate or doesn't bother people with mild allergies.
Mm. That's a handy coat then, isn't it?
Once you have a good coat, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, or do you think we've done justice to them at that?
You know, they always say that the dog's personality has to suit the owner's personality, and I guess that's about the only thing. I've talked about activity level, I've talked about knowledge and requirements and stuff like that, but I guess you have to have that same on-the-go mentality, you know, to want to own a Jack Russell and be happy with it. You have to be a real goer, a person that enjoys a challenge, and a person that's really active. And I guess that's probably why I like them so much. They're definitely a challenge at times. But you know what? It keeps me thinking. Man, I mean, I'm 51 years old now, and I just, these dogs are going to keep me young. If nothing else, they will. And I love that about them, because they always, you know, there's always something happening, and they're always trying to kind of outwit me and keep me on my toes. And I've been doing this for a long time, and every once in a while I go, oh, I should know better. Oh, my goodness. Should have known that he or she would do that. But no, they're just really fun. They're very, very entertaining. They are definitely witty in their own way. You know, they say dogs can't reason, but I'll tell you what, these dogs, they somehow can reason sometimes. They can figure it out. I have a friend who who has two of my dogs, and she was telling me the other day she left the one, and she hasn't had the one that long. So the one, her name was Ember, and Strike is the other one. Strike's a TDI dog, and actually that makes the third one. But anyways, he's always so well behaved. He's an intact male, which means he's a breeding male. He's fairly young. He is so laid back, and he's so good-natured. You'd never believe he's a Jack Russell. Well, along comes Ember, and now she's getting him in trouble. She's figured out how to open up the door to the garbage. She's figured out how to pull open the pantry and get into stuff there, and she's just got stuff everywhere, and Strike's sort of standing there going, well, it wasn't me. You know, when they get found out, they ate a whole brand new bag of, top-quality biscuits and, of course, got diarrhea after that. In the garbage, pulled the potato sack out, Ember did, into the living room. So, they definitely could be full of mischief, just like a two-year-old kid. And there's one that is perfectly well-behaved and always has been, and the other one comes along, and he goes, oh, this is kind of fun. So I guess that's the other thing. You're laughing, and, I always do. You have to have a sense of humor to own one of these dogs. They are so entertaining, and you just have to laugh at them and say, well, what the heck? It's like jumping in the mud puddle, or it's like going out in the pouring rain, You have to enjoy that type of thing in life, because if you're a prissy person, you won't want a Jack Russell.
Just to finish with, there's a lovely quote on your website. Can you tell us that?
Well, it's funny. I ran across that one fairly recently, and I said to my webmaster, I have got to have that on my website. That is just so perfect. They share my home. It's what it is. It's Jack Russell Terriers share my home, fill my life, and own my heart. And they absolutely do. And they are not my whole life, but they make my life whole. And, it is so true, because you can't focus your whole life around dogs, although most of mine is, unfortunately, in some ways. But they do make my life whole. I'm a true believer in animals. I love animals. I've always grown up with animals, whether it's bunnies, cats, horses, you name it, and it's been dogs in my adult life. Matter of fact, that's one funny thing I really should tell you. I was not allowed to have a dog as a child. And there was just something, for some reason, father said, we don't have the time, we don't have this, we don't have that for a dog. We lived on a working farm, but it was a vegetable farm, so it wasn't a huge acreage. And he always said, when you grow up and get married, dear, you can have a dog. I'll buy you a dog. So I always blame him for this. I said, well, you see, this is what happened. You didn't let me have the dogs. That's not the word I'm looking for, though. But anyway.
Deprived.
That's the word, yes. You deprived me of dogs in my childhood, and now I'm overcompensating as an adult.
I have a theory that adults who've had a dog as a child don't get a dog. They deprive their own children. Whereas I never had a dog as a child, and I was determined, just like you, to have dogs when I was grown up, and to give my child the experience of loving a dog and living with a dog, and respecting a dog. But that's what I think. If you've had a dog as a child, you're a bit blasé about it sometimes. but if you've yearned for a dog, then you do get one when you're grown up.
Well, I got one and another and another and another and keep going. I'm single, and right now I think I have 14 dogs. But I love them. I do. It's a passion, but they definitely are a part of my life. My other thought about people in general and dogs is, if people really don't like dogs, really can't warm up or care for animals, it doesn't have to be dogs, I guess, but animals in general, and I always relate to dogs because I have them, then I think there is something basically wrong with the mechanism of that person. I don't know. In other words, dogs are known to reduce blood pressure. The dog lays in your lap, and it's a known, documented fact that they reduce blood pressure. How can you not like that? It's just a feeling of like, this feels so good, and people that don't either understand that, don't allow it to happen, don't want it, don't can't warm up to dogs. You know what? Most of the time, I just don't really like those people and get along with them. I think there's something wrong.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know, it says when they're whole, my whole life, well, you know, that's how I feel about them. I will be with them forever, or they'll be with me as long as we can be together. I'll have a dog, and I'm probably a Jack Russell.
If that's whetted your appetite for more information about this attractive, versatile terrier, there's a link on the Dogcast site to the Conquest Terrier website. In the UK recently, two brothers have been taken to court by the RSPCA on a charge of causing unnecessary suffering for allowing their Labrador's weight to soar up to over 154 pounds. Although the brothers claimed the dog only ate a normal diet, poor Rusty, who apparently looked more like a seal than a dog, is now in the care of the RSPCA and has shed over 50 pounds. I guess sometimes people think loving their dog means treating and feeding him like a human. The truth is that a dog is a dog, not a person. And to be a dog is to be a beautiful, loving, faithful, energetic, intelligent creature. In fact, the only downside of being a dog is that they have to rely on humans for so much. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What do you call a dog that likes honey? Winnie the Pooch.